music from Frankie Avalon and his song Venus. We heard from Elvis, Good Luck Charm. We heard before that from Nancy Honeytree. Remember Honeytree from the late 60s, early 70s, one of the original Jesus people, they called him, the original kind of Christian pop music artist. Lovely Jesus, the name of her song. Carolyn Aaron sang for us, What in the World? It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's a Broken Road Radio Thursday morning. We're joined now by Mary Sabin, who is in... I forgot the town already. You know what? Toledo, Ohio. As in Holy Toledo. It's that place.
Holy Toledo.
Yeah, and Mary is with Opportunity International, which is a ministry near and dear to our hearts here at Broken Road. David's here, too. We're going to talk a little bit. Well, first, to begin with, Mary, Opportunity International, how long has Opportunity International been around?
Opportunity International has been around for 44 years, David.
My goodness.
And Jim, we are, we're kind of, I think, an early pioneer in the world of microfinance and have got an incredible record of success. We've served nearly 2 million clients in the 44 years, and we're looking to double that by 2020.
Do you think of yourselves first as a Christian missionary operation?
We are motivated by Christ's call to love and serve the poor, and we look to the example of the Good Samaritan who crossed the street to help someone in need and didn't give consideration to ethnicity or religion or gender. Our call is to serve the poorest of the poor.
And more importantly, took the initiative
Correct.
In the case of the Good Samaritan. How do you how do you do that with people? I know you operate in some of the most destitute areas of the world. How do you do that? How do you reach out to them? You must have people there.
You know what? We are a large organization. I think it is always surprising because we are not well known, despite the fact we've been around for 44 years. But we employ 17,000 people. And of that number, only 100 are here in the United States. Most of our people are loan officers and folks who are providing direct services to our clients in terms of helping them transform their lives and getting on the right track economically. So I think, first off, I think through the motivation to and Christ's call to love and serve the poor, our team members are out there to help lift people up out of poverty and transform their lives, their children's lives, and their communities, realizing that economic well-being and health is a stepping stone to making sure our clients are able to provide education for their kids and kind of step their way out of that horrendous cycle of poverty.
Now, what do you mean? Go ahead, David.
I'm kind of interested in the step that you take, and there are all kinds of charities out there, and the one that I'm kind of aligned with seems to be want to feed the poor. And want to clothe the poor. I want to give them stuff. I want to give them this and give them that. But your approach is different. Your approach is the old Confucius, give a man a fish today, you'll have to give him another one tomorrow, and the bad paraphrase. But you're going to teach the men how to fish.
David, I'm so glad you asked that question because you're exactly right. I think it's what distinguishes us from a number of other organizations out there. We provide a hand up and not a handout, and I think that's what can help stop the cycle of poverty when we are able to help people to provide for themselves. Before we were on air, I was talking with Jim and David about some of the programs that we've got. Beyond our loan initiative, we've got, and our loan initiative, in fact, goes beyond entrepreneurs. We're now focused a great deal on agriculture. And to that end, we are helping farmers who could barely feed their families, barely subsistence farming. We've got them through our loan officers and our technology and our training. We're able to help them not only more than provide for their family, they're able to provide for their communities. And our agriculture transformation leader, John Magney, has coined it Africans Feeding Africa. So I think to your point, it's so important that we are able to give people the ability and the skills and the wherewithal that they can lift themselves up and not be reliant on handouts.
Well, you really provide the fertile ground for local talent and entrepreneurship to take root and grow, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I find so interesting about the opportunity model is we don't just give a loan to a person. We've got groups, we call them trust groups. And I'm sure Chuck Day shared that with you when he talked with you several years ago. But our trust groups are consist of 20 to 30 entrepreneurs, most of them women, because again, 93% of our clients are women. And those trust groups are responsible for repaying those loans. There's no collateral. They are not putting up collateral, but they're putting up trust and they guarantee one another's loans. So let's pretend Jim had a sick child one week and wasn't able to make his payment. The trust group helps lift Jim up, and they all come together as a group and are responsible for that total. So it is it's extraordinary because you bring people from who perhaps weren't necessarily friends or even acquaintances. They might not have had some bad experiences together, but it brings them together in a new synergistic model, and it works. 98% of our loans are paid back, and I would like Citibank and Fifth Third and lots of other commercial banks would like to see that kind of a number in terms of loan payback.
Well, I'll bet they would.
You said 98%?
98% payback rate.
Now, these are micro loans. What's a typical loan size?
Our typical loan size is about $178 in terms of a first loan. And the beautiful thing about opportunity is it doesn't stop there. Typically, our clients repay their loan in 4 months. A gift, you know, if David made a $150 contribution to Opportunity to fund one loan, that gift would keep giving because we would fuel one loan and then that loan would be paid back and we'd be able to give out two more loans in that year. So it's incredible in terms of the leverage and recycling.
And I think of Jesus' words too. If you can trust someone with the small things, you can trust them with the bigger things. I mean, this builds confidence and trust, and injects energy into a local community. And if enough communities do that, that's the region and the nation in an area that is horribly vulnerable to violence, to overthrow, to chaos. I mean, this is important work. Where do you work besides Africa? Now, Africa's a big place. So are you all over Africa? Are you in just a couple of countries?
We are all over Africa, and we're in 22 countries around the globe, anywhere from the Philippines to Honduras to India to China. So we've got a very large footprint. And we are really trying to evaluate. One of the things we're looking at right now is making sure that we're where we need to be and using our resources really wisely. You know, we want to invest more deeply in areas like the DRC and like Tanzania. So to that end, we are pulling out of certain areas like Mexico, not leaving them high and dry. We are leaving them with existing organizations who have been wonderful partners, in fact, former Opportunity team members, but just really want to be strategic and wise about investing our dollars where we can make the biggest impact.
Where do these dollars come from? I mean, presumably there are people here supporting the effort. What are the mechanics, the logistics of that?
You know what? All of our investments in terms of our the dollars we make available to our clients across the globe are realized through philanthropic donations. That's where it all starts. We've raised nearly $40 million in terms of contributions from individuals like Jim and David. And then in addition to that, we've got some incredible corporate and foundation partners like the Gates Foundation, like Caterpillar, like John Deere, like MasterCard. I mean, we've got some really wonderful partners who help fuel our resources. In addition to that, we are able to leverage those dollars and borrow on them and provide additional dollars. So $1 becomes $6 mm-hmm. over the period of about 5 years because of the way we're able to leverage our resources.
And it's possible for an individual to get involved with you through your website, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you go to opportunity.org, you can meet our clients and you can really see some impactful video as to how we're making a difference in specific client lives. And it gives you an opportunity to give online as well.
And you don't have to give $10,000.
No, you can give $15, you can give $10, you can give $250.
But I mean, you can also direct that. You can direct that to a specific business, somebody who, some entrepreneur in the Philippines, like David did, or in Africa, that captures your imagination and maybe your heart too. You can give $5, $10, $15 and get feedback, can't you?
Exactly, Jim. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage all your listeners to do that very thing. In fact, they should be pulling it up on their computers as we speak.
Yeah, I hope so. David, I didn't mean to ace you out of a question there. I kind of...
No, I've forgotten the question.
Why does that not surprise me?
Well, yeah, I just like the mind is going in too many different directions. Mary, not to get away from the nuts and bolts of the organization, but you made a statement, in the beginning of the conversation. You talked about the transformation that takes place between giver and receiver on the ground, and you said you had recently been in Africa. Tell us a little bit more about that. What was your trip like? What was the kind of things that you recognized as changed in yourself?
You know what? I am so glad you asked, David. I have recently returned from a trip to Rwanda, and Rwanda was destroyed by genocide 20 years ago. Nearly a million people died in a period of 3 months, and it just devastated a country in so many ways. And it was my privilege to go and visit and meet our clients and see the miracle of restoration. I look at what Rwanda is today, and it is a miracle in terms of how that country is healed and moved on. Never forgetting. You'll see signs all over that talk about never forget. But I would love to tell the story of one of our clients, Beata, who was a victim of genocide. She saw two of her children murdered. One of them was on her back. They stabbed her through her baby, and her husband was killed in front of her eyes, and they left her for dead for 4 days, and she laid there waiting to die, and instead she was rescued by the RPF, who got her to a hospital, and it took her about 3 years to heal, and when she did, she reached out to Opportunity International for her first loan. And she started a business of making bead necklaces. And the first necklace she made took her 3 days to make. But you look at Beata now, I think her first loan was for something like $100. And right now she has gone on to receive over 10 loans. She employs more than 9 people. She makes beads and baskets and purses and has got quite a little industry going. And she's been able to put, she lost 2 children in the midst of the genocide, but she's been able to put her other 3 children through school. When we were there and visiting, she had just purchased her son a laptop computer for college as we were there. The story of Beata doesn't end with Beata and her children. She's a living example of love and transformation for her neighbors. She's hired her neighbors. She's she demonstrates to them what success can look like. And it's just, she's a beautiful, beautiful story of recovery and what Christ's healing can do. And it just, when you look at stories like Beata and you think you're having a bad day and you hear what she's been through, We don't know what a bad day is.
I hesitate to go into the area of politics and the area of economic systems and the area of governments. But, you know, I'm, one of the things that you know, it's almost become a personal obsession, but it's somewhere between that and a hobby, is the defense of the capitalistic system and the freedom to be able to express yourself and support yourself without outside help, without outside assistance constantly, or, you know, the much vaunted, the much maligned safety net. And, you know, the opportunity exists in these places or can exist, and it should more. And there are so many agencies, so many organizations, so many governments who insist on just handing things out and just, here, take this, take this, take this. You don't have to do anything. And then the person is back the next day.
Right. But, I think it builds a cycle of reliance. Huh. And you can't break it. Then you're completely dependent. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. And we're facing, I'm going to digress even more, but we're facing the same kind of thing in this country. The number of people on welfare, on unemployment, on food stamps, on all kinds of assistance keeps growing and growing and growing. And, you know, I fear that this country might someday become a really good place for Opportunity International to come to work.
Well, the feeling is that all this safety net idea that somehow government can provide and take care of us is ultimately going to erode this spirit of entrepreneurship and this creativity and this energy that is being exhibited, like that young lady in Rwanda, mm-hmm. and like other people across Africa. So I you know, who's to say, but maybe Africa is the new United States, knitting together now, forming a basis for a solid society. And Opportunity International seems to be spot on with its approach and its philosophy. Mary, you mentioned that most of your clients are women. And,
correct.
And that kind of matches up with something we heard from Joy Jones of the Malawi Orphan Care Project earlier this week. On Tuesday, she was with us. She said they deal mainly with women because the men aren't home. And many of them have gone to this. Now, most of the people in Malawi are small farmers. And you've mentioned to us off the air that one of the directions that Opportunity International has taken is with small farmers. But many of the men are no longer at home, are they?
No. And I think the responsibility falls on the shoulders of the women. And I think even when, I'm sorry to be disparaging men when I'm talking to two wonderful men, but it's just been interesting to know that the numbers change drastically when we're loaning to men. The money doesn't get to where it's supposed to go. It's not getting to the business. It's not getting to the kids. And our loan repayment rate drops.
Why is that?
You know what? I'm not sure that I know the answer to that, but I think it's because the women are putting their kids first and are really trying to change that cycle of poverty.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting. Now, Joy talked earlier this week that a large number of the men have developed AIDS, and she said in Malawi particularly. AIDS is a very large problem, HIV particularly, and then a large number of men have gone to the city to find jobs.
And I think that's true. And I think AIDS, if it's a problem with men, it's a problem with women. I think it's widespread, not only in Malawi but across Africa. So I think that's where Opportunity International, as much as we are fueling the economic engine. We also are looking at our clients from a holistic point of view and trying to show the motivation of our call to love and serve the poor and answer Christ's call. In addition, we're trying to pay attention to other needs they have, and we do a great deal of HIV and AIDS education. Sorry.
Sound like right. You got a call. One of the things that I've been asking, and my wife was the one who was first involved or first attracted to this opportunity to go to Africa and be a member of the mission, is what do we do? What are we going to do? Specifically, what are we going to do? And the mission that we're associated with or aligned with or is shepherding us over there is relatively new, and I don't know that they've specified their role yet. I mean, I think they're just kind of maybe they got the cart before the horse, and they said, well, we're there, and now we'll figure out what to do. But your mission is more specific, more outlined. You've got more of a track record, and I guess I guess I'm answering my own question.
Well, and I would love to talk a little bit. I mean, I know about your passion for Malawi, David, and we did talk a little bit offline about our efforts in terms of agriculture. But it is incredible to see how we are making such huge strides through technology and through education. It might be typically when we think about farms in the United States, we're thinking about much larger pieces of property. The average farm, I want to say, in Malawi is an eighth of an acre, which is small. And Most of these farmers don't even understand the size of their plots of their so they weren't managing their resources properly. We go in with our loan officers and we use GPS to map out exactly what their land is, so they can know the right amount of fertilizer, the right amount of seed, the right amount of pesticide, so that they can maximize the yield. In addition to that, unlike our other trust groups, we talked a little bit about our trust groups. I didn't go into a great deal of detail, but with our entrepreneurs, you might have somebody who's a bead maker. You might have somebody who's a tailor. You might have somebody who's a baker. They're all from different areas and have a different focus in terms of their entrepreneurial gifts. The way we manage our trust groups with our agriculture program, if I had Jim and David and Mary in a trust group and we were farmers, we'd all be rice farmers, or we'd all be cocoa farmers, or we'd all be maize farmers. So we would be able to mobilize our resources and maximize efficiencies amongst ourselves, so we could, together with our loan officer, first off, make sure we're planting the right crop. Then we'd rely on the GPS mapping to make sure that we were planting the right amount of seed and administering the right amount of fertilizer, et cetera. But we also, because we're in a trust group, we're almost a mini co-op. So we are, we're getting the best price on seed. We're getting the best price on fertilizer. We're sharing irrigation. We're getting our crops to market effectively and efficiently because we've got the power of group coming together. And, you hear the impact of that. When I was in Rwanda, we had the farmers stand up one by one and talk about how opportunity had transformed their lives. And, in some instances, we're increasing crop yields 100-fold. So it really does. It makes John Magnay's dream of Africans feeding Africa come that much closer. And the other thing that's exciting in terms of what we're doing with our agriculture outreach is one of the big challenges. You and I can hop in our car and go to the bank without giving it much thought, or step in at Kroger and access cash through the ATM. Access is hard for our rural clients. And as much as opportunity has worked to put ATM machines on the back of pickup trucks and open branches, it's not enough. So we've been working really hard to make access even easier, and we've got incredible mobile technology that the bank their phone becomes the bank. And it's interesting, in Africa, so many of our clients don't have electricity or running water. Most everybody's got a cell phone, which is just so interesting. But the phone becomes the bank. And right now they can, Jim was paying David for the fertilizer he needed for his crops this fall. You could do it on your phone. And it's a platform that has been supported by the Gates Foundation. In fact, Bill Gates held it out as a best case example at a meeting a couple of weeks ago, because I think we're setting the pace in terms of technology and making it easier for our clients to have access to capital.
Yeah, picture all of these small farmers listening to Broken Road Radio as they work their maize crops in there. They could do that on the phone, you know.
On their cell phone?
Yeah. Mary, how much if any role does barter play in this? Does it all boil down to money? I mean, ultimately it has to as a medium of exchange, but do you start people, maybe a small community, using barter as a way to kind of bootstrap themselves up?
You know what? Not to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know, there could be examples of that happening that I'm not aware of, but it's the model that we've used is based on money.
It's fully into the 21st century then. It's bringing them forward quickly.
Correct.
Into an atmosphere where they can relate to the rest of the world. So that leads me to the question, do you find help or opposition from government in the places you work?
You know what? I think in the places where we work, for the most part, we're there because the government appreciates and supports our work. We've had questions, why aren't you in Ethiopia? And I think it's because the government doesn't want us there. So I think that you will find, for the most part, we are, I think the government views us as an ally and someone that is helping to lift their people out of poverty.
Now, Africa is known to be very tribal at the cultural level. Do you find opposition being a Christian organization?
You know what? I think that I'm sure there are examples of that. And, you know, you're just, I think, just in terms of the way the world works. But I think we work through it, and we, even though we are a Christian organization, I think oftentimes government or our opponents or people who might be afraid of who or what we are look at our results and look beyond our Christian call. And I'm sure in certain instances it's a roadblock, but we work to jump over those roadblocks.
And your job is not to proselytize, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Because I can see where that would engender immediate opposition in areas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we demonstrate our Christian roots by showing love and by providing the hand up that we do and by being a reflection of Christ's love.
Modeling,
and that's the best kind of proselytization we can do.
Yes.
In our training session so far, that's what we've been urged to do. We've been urged to be very aware of other people's culture, other people's viewpoint. I mean, accept the notion we're not there to change minds and save souls. We're there to demonstrate the love that Christ showed us. Back a little bit to the money and the growth of the program. Can you say that there are 5% of the farmers or the area who want to go out and farm, or 50% of the farmers, or somewhere in between, that are now using something like the program?
You know what? I'm not sure I understand your question, David. Could you repeat it for me?
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering how much more need is there?
Maybe what proportion of the farms in, for example, Malawi, are connected with Opportunity International?
A case of, yeah, go ahead.
In Malawi in specific, our fundraising goal for this year is $1,962,000 to help us really meet the needs for rural expansion and really increase our education and our student loan fee initiative. So, I mean, The interesting thing about Opportunity is we have got an incredible network that is thriving, and we really could double what we are doing in terms of meeting the needs of clients around the globe. Our goal is to double what we're raising and what we're providing in terms of loans and other financial vehicles, because there is so much need. But the good news is our infrastructure, we don't need to increase our infrastructure in terms of banks and personnel, et cetera. I mean, we want to double our outreach in terms of meeting client need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people on the ground. And that's you kind of touched on a little bit of what I was thinking about, too. There was an NPR story just recently that Barclays in London was going to stop serving or stop transferring money into Somalia for whatever reason. One of the reasons was they suspected that the money was being used to sponsor terrorism. and there really is no way to track it. So there doesn't seem to be a banking system in existence in the country. In Somalia, at least, and probably, you know, in Rwanda and other countries as well. There doesn't seem to be a monetary system on the ground. So everybody is relying on getting money from somewhere else, transferring it in, or using it to buy things on credit, I guess.
Well, I would say there's a banking system in place in Rwanda. I can't speak for Somalia. But I think that, you know, there are also beyond the microfinance organizations like Opportunity, there are other commercial banks there. So I think, and what's interesting to me when we talk about countries like Somalia that are so, politically unstable, we've got a wonderful supporter. Her name is Judge, General, Claudia Kennedy, and she looks at, Opportunity as, a stabilization force in terms of national security, that where you've got an economy that is beginning to turn around and you've got people who have jobs and who are able to provide for their families, those areas are less ripe for terrorism. So we've got supporters like General Kennedy who don't look at us all. They certainly appreciate what we do in terms of economics, but her real appreciation for what we do is, you know, it comes down to national security.
Mm-hmm. When you were in Rwanda, did you get out of the city, out of the big city? I'm not even sure what the capital of Rwanda is.
Kigali is the capital.
Oh, okay, Kigali. Did you get out into the areas? Did you actually see some of the farms and some of your clients?
We drove probably about 3.5 hours outside Kigali, and we met with about 200 rice farmers. Hmm. And, you know, that's where I had the joy of hearing from them about how we've had such an incredible impact on yields. You know, they all stood up to say what they had benefited from. And, you know, we had folks talking about the fact that they were able to buy a truck to get their, to get their crops to market, or that they were able to send their son to college, or that they were able to buy more property or build a house. So the stories were incredible. They also shared with us their need, and their need was for quicker access to capital, more money. And we work hard to pay attention to those needs and try to provide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The people that are... Now, the people that are on the staff in Rwanda, for example, those are Rwandans, though.
Correct.
Is that right? Okay.
That is correct.
You hire locally.
We do. And you know what? We've got a whole really committed program where we want to really build a leadership track for those employees and make sure that we are giving them the training and the tools they need to be the best and the brightest, and to provide the best and the brightest services for our clients.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like Opportunity International is the whole package, the stabilizing those people, those places over there, seems to be maybe the long term benefit for the African continent as a whole. I think this is just astounding. We've been talking with Mary Sabin of Opportunity International, and I know she's got a busy day ahead of her, so I think we're going to kind of wrap up here. But I would encourage you to visit their website and learn how they function and maybe get involved, because it doesn't take a whole lot to make a huge difference in the areas where they operate, in the most destitute areas of the world. And again, the website, Mary, is opportunity.org.
Perfect.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Opportunity International is the organization. Opportunity.org is the website. You can link to them from ours. And if you're listening on BrokenRoadRadio.com this morning, you see a link over on the right-hand side of the homepage. We hope you visit. And Mary, thank you very much. This has been,
well, it's been a joy to be with you. You should be in radio. You've got a great radio voice.
Well, thank you. Real radio. David, what does she mean by that?
Which one of us are you talking about?
Well, you both do, but I was talking in particular about Jim.
Mary, thank you so much. Keep up the excellent work.
And, thank you.
And let's stay
in
touch here.
Have a blessed day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mary. Bye-bye.